Mark, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
Congress is sitting with about an 8% approval rating, and words like obstructionism and partisanship are all part of the regular vernacular. So my question is, are we just experiencing the realities of a modern democratic republic, or did the founding fathers have a different expectation on how Washington was supposed to work?
That's a great question to start with, Brian. Part of the frustration with government is that it was never designed to work efficiently. Government and business are not the same thing. In fact, the inefficiency of our government was a feature, not a flaw, by the founders. The thing they feared most was the concentration of power in any one hand. Mm-hmm. That's why we have a system of checks and balances. But having said that, there's no doubt that the current period of time is particularly bad and particularly frustrating, mostly because of the sharp partisan political polarization has sort of paralyzed Congress. And it's forced it to sort of mess up its own procedures and rules to the point where it's become very difficult to get anything important accomplished.
Mark, I recently heard you quoted as saying, "No one is happy in Washington." So what needs to happen first to begin to fix this thing?
Well, the most important thing, if you want happy legislators, you have to let them legislate. Many of these members came from state legislatures or other local government where they were used to getting things done. In the current Congress, very little is actually voted on except that which is brought to the floor by leadership. And then in the House, they often have closed rules, and the Democrats frequently have filibusters in the Senate. And I'll give you the best example is that the Republicans have two major priorities this year: health care reform and tax reform. And both of those bills have been introduced as reconciliation bills, all designed to get around the fact that the Senate has a filibuster in place because a reconciliation bill can't be filibustered. So you only need 50 votes. But that's not a very good way to run a government. The filibuster was designed to force consensus, force the majority party to get a few members of the minority party to moderate the bill enough to get a few members of the minority party so you can get to 60 votes.
So is the president correct in advocating getting rid of the filibuster?
I'm beginning to believe that unless they make a radical adjustment to the filibuster, it's just going to disappear anyway because the level of frustration it creates is getting to be too great. There's a famous story of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson having coffee. And Jefferson had been ambassador to France during the Constitutional Convention, so he wasn't there. And he asked Washington, "How in the world can you allow the creation of a Senate? It smacks of nobility like the House of Lords in England." Huh. And Washington said, "Well, why do you pour your coffee into the saucer?" And Jefferson says, "Well, to cool it down." He said, "Ah, thus so. The House of Representatives represents the hot passions of the people. The Senate is a saucer by which we cool down those hot passions and get the consensus."
Well,
but it doesn't seem to be doing that anymore. It might be time, or at least to strongly revise it so it's only used rarely instead of constantly.
We hear a lot about what's wrong with Washington, but almost zero talk on how to fix it. So let's get practical. What are some ideas on how to make it work better?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that Congress should consider calling a joint committee, a bipartisan, bicameral, both chambers, explore ideas for reform and making the system work. And this is something that Congress has done traditionally going back to 1920. Every 20 years or so, dust off the reforms, get rid of some of these exceptions they've made, and sort of reset. And it's time for them to do that.
When you say the word committee, though, I got to tell you, the eyes start rolling back in the back of the head a little bit because people start going, "Oh my gosh, another governmental committee. What's this going to produce?" But you're saying there's historical precedent there that actually gets things done, though, right?
Yes, because the danger is if you try to change the rules without the participation of the other party, you actually engender more bitterness and more polarization. And actually, I think the timing right now is really great. Right now, the Republicans have a slim majority in the Senate, a little bit healthier majority in the House, but not a big majority. And given the political situation today, anything could happen next year. So both sides would have to go into negotiating reforms with the idea that they could be in the minority.
Number two,
improve the authorization process. Now, that sounds like a highly technical term. But under our budget, we have authorizing committees like the Armed Services Committee or the Education and Workforce Committee or Ways and Means Committee. These are authorization committees. They authorize what money government is allowed to spend, and then we appropriate the money through the appropriation committee. So the authorizers say, look at the program, approve the program. The appropriators decide how much they're going to spend on it. What we have been doing is skipping over the authorization process completely and just going straight to appropriations. And even then, we're passing bills where we lump 12 appropriation bills all into one. And it's, how can anyone possibly know what's in a 3,000-page bill that's filled with numbers?
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
Right.
But the authorizers are the ones who put on oversight. They're the ones who question the government. But if the administration doesn't have to worry about them approving their budget and their programs, they don't show up to the hearings. And so Congress loses power of review over the executive branch, and it weakens Congress dramatically in the government system. And then finally, we have to get back to what people love to talk about, no one ever actually likes to do, which is regular order. By regular order, that means following the rules you passed. So you have open debate. People are allowed to offer amendments. People are, you know, everyone's allowed to debate on the floor, and you have votes. And sometimes votes are tough, and sometimes votes are easy. But you cast a whole bunch of votes, and you come up with a consensus in the end that represents everybody.
Well, it seems so obvious that you want to bring back order, right? Regular order. Who's going to argue against that?
Exactly.
But, so where did disorder come from? Why did that get?
Well, you know, what happens is we've become so partisan that people say, well, you know, if you allow the other side to offer an amendment, that could be embarrassing to me in the next reelection, because what if it's something that's unpopular? Mm-hmm. And so they stopped allowing them to offer amendments, and they blocked it. The whole idea is if you let the Senate work their will, if you let the House work their will, you'll start to get different majorities on different issues. It won't always be a partisan majority.
Yeah.
In some ways, we're kind of acting like a parliamentary system where we have Republican votes are needed to pass this and Democrat votes are needed to block that. And this is a fairly new phenomenon in our system. We used to have interest majorities based on interest. So you'd have energy-producing states against energy-consuming states. You'd have agriculture-producing states against, you know, other consumer states. And you'd have sort of individual majorities on based on the issue.
Since they didn't create them in the first place, would the Founding Fathers be surprised at the power of the political parties today?
Well, of course, that's a great point. There were no parties in the when the Constitution was written. We did not have any political parties. They didn't develop until about the Third Congress. But James Madison was very acutely aware there were interests. They did not think that human beings were always going to be, you know, altruistic and operating on the interests of others. What you said was fine as long as you allowed all interests to compete equally with each other. Because there's so many different kinds of interests. Whenever one gets too strong, the others have an interest in knocking them down a notch. And so rather than limit the ability of people to petition their government, or they said, make it so that everyone can.
What are your thoughts on earmarks? In a counterintuitive way, does bringing them back actually make Congress more efficient?
Yeah, my belief is that if you have an open and transparent earmarking process, and every member of Congress's constituents can see what was earmarked, that's actually the role of the legislator. Alexander Hamilton talked about how the representative is supposed to be an uber representative of their people. They should know more about their district, more about the needs of their people than anybody else. It allows the member to offer legislation that would specifically, that's going to be spent anyway on the money, but specifically directed towards high priority projects. You know, if you could offer them something that helps them go back to their district and say, you know, here's something I got done tangibly under the bill. You know, now all of a sudden you start to build bipartisan majorities for these things. When you get elected to Congress, your job is to represent your constituents. When Congress tells you you cannot participate in the process, you cannot offer an amendment, we won't accept anything you're going to do, kind of it's your people who are being robbed.
Mark, you work with students today at Harvard and Georgetown. Is there any reason to believe that this younger generation is going to approach politics any differently?
Part of what my goal at Harvard is to introduce, I think, students who are going to be future leaders in this country to the idea of what Congress should be, not just what Congress is today. But then I'm also optimistic about the millennial generation. They're very consensus-oriented, and you know, that's kind of what the founders had in mind. They didn't want concentration of power. They wanted the Congress to come up with a consensus that a broad majority of people support, not just one particular political faction. And you can tell the example of that in legislation in the modern era. Medicare, they passed the Voting Rights Act. They passed the Civil Rights Act. All of those bills were passed by majorities of both parties in both chambers. And I think that goes right back to your first question, which is the heart of the dissatisfaction with Congress, is that the average person does not perceive they're passing anything that's important in their lives. And the question is, if you disappoint them for too long, what begins to happen in terms of their views on the executive versus the Congress? They'll just start turning to the executive and saying, okay, well, you do it. Like Barack Obama, do it. Take out your pen and your phone, or Donald Trump signing something in the Oval Office. We'll just let the president do everything.
Yeah.
And now you do have a threat to our system of government.
You know, the car dealers listening today are very influential politically. And therefore, do we bear any responsibility because of that in changing the culture in Washington?
You know, Brian, it's an excellent question, because at the end, that's the root of the system is based on what the voters want and what they get their representatives to do. I mean, we very deliberately use the word representative because they're supposed to be going to members who are taking their views and representing them to the rest of the government. Part of what they should be talking about is, you know, gentlemen, get your house, and ladies and gentlemen, get your house in order. You need to fix the Congress so that it starts to work again. Because, you know, I have people who work for me, and we know people because they come in all the time to our dealerships, and they're hurting. You know, the partisanship, it's become a disruptive force. And we need you to sort of rise above that and make the system work again for the people.